All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network, your home for hockey talk covering every team in the NHL. New episodes every Monday. Download at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the return we've all been waiting for. It's finally here. UFC's most notorious icon, Conor McGregor, is stepping back into the octagon this Saturday. Be sure to check out DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of the UFC, for a shot to turn $1 into $257. That's right. New users can bet just $1 on McGregor to win by knockout in the first round, and if he does, you'll be cashing in $257 just like that. Bet a little, win a lot. It's that simple. There's no Flames game this Saturday, so I think I know what you're going to be doing. But hey, while we're all excited for this weekend's premiere, UFC bout, let's not forget, football is in the midst of their playoffs, so head to the app to check out the great playoff promotions. DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable, making it easy for you to deposit and withdraw your money at your convenience. Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code THPN when you sign up to turn $1 into $257 if McGregor wins by first-round knockout. Place your bet and watch the fist fly this weekend. That's code THPN for new players to get $257 if McGregor wins by first-round knockout. For a limited time only, at DraftKings Sportsbook. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the In the Dome podcast. All right, I downloaded the DraftKings app. It's pretty interesting. I made a few bets. I only bet one night, and I loaded up on Connor.
Connor McDavid's not fighting, okay?
It's Connor McGregor fighting, but you think it should be Connor versus Connor? I don't disagree, but I got the app. Here's what you get for on Drysdale and McDavid. I picked them. They had 0 points.
Who would win in a fist fight? Drysdale or McDavid? Drysdale would win. He's mean.
Dude, you know that Conor McGregor is open-handed slapping.
Conor McDavid. Now you got them mixed up, bro.
Oh, man. See, I do it every time. Yeah. McDavid is open-hand slapping, and he's going, if he gets hit. Just like when, what was it last year? Remember when he threw a hissy fit on the bench when we were kicking their ass so bad?
When Gio supposedly need him?
No, it was late. Wasn't it something else? Wasn't it?
I don't know. He's always crying about something.
He was on. He is literally always crying. Do you want to talk about how much you love his face when he's crying?
I wouldn't even mind how much he was crying if he wasn't so ugly. And it's like there's no excuse for him to be that ugly. Period. He makes almost $13 million a year. He can mix in a shave. He can get a haircut. He can look presentable. You're the face of the league, and you look like a homeless person, Connor McDavid. Get your shit together, bro.
The face of the NHL can be mistaken for a homeless person.
No wonder it's the least popular sport in the world.
Oh, boy. Well, hey, man, like maybe he goes to barbershops and he's not allowed to because of COVID. So maybe it's not his fault.
No, it's his fault.
It's definitely his fault. Okay, speaking of COVID, so we'll touch on some news before we jump into the game recap. The Capitals have just been fined $100,000 by the league. Where does that money go, by the way?
I don't know. Does it go to like some sort of player emergency fund or something? I don't know I think that's where like player fines go. I'm curious to where like a team fine would go. I actually have no idea. That's a really good question. See if I can find that out right now.
Team fines. So anyways, they get fined. Was it just four guys? So if you haven't heard it, I'm sure you've heard it. Ovechkin and Kuznetsov and
probably all the Russians.
A couple other guys were hanging out in a hotel room. What, after a game?
Must have been at some point.
And then how did they get found out? I wonder. Somebody called the front desk.
Well, didn't they have like, wasn't it like tracing or something? I think that's what it was.
Cell phones are being traced, you mean?
No, like contact tracing or something. Like, because I think somebody must have tested positive or something. I don't know. I don't think they've released anything of like.
I'm like, so they're cell phone tracing these guys?
Can you imagine?
They have like little cameras in all the rooms. Like, oh my God, they're hanging out.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm sure it was like a testing contact tracing thing, but I don't know. It hasn't been released as to how they found out. All that said, the NHL revealed that they broke rules. So somebody found out somehow.
I wonder what they do when they're in the dressing room hanging out, or not hanging out, but like, you know, before, after practices, games. I know the NFL had like partitions in between the stalls.
They don't do anything. Like, have you seen the pregame stuff the Flames are doing? They're just in the tunnel like normal, like doing that thing where they bump into each other and they're like 2 feet from each other's faces.
Yeah, I think the point is like, man, these guys are already within vicinity.
You think they're not showering together in the dressing room?
It's like, okay, signal file in the shower one at a time. It's put your mask on your pecker and get in there. It's kind of, I get it, right? If you're the league, you got to crack down. But is it any different if you're hanging out? They were probably even social distancing. Maybe they weren't. Maybe the real thing is they got caught doing coke again, eh?
Right. It's like, it's like probably Kuznetsov's coke dealer is the guy who they were hanging out with or something.
Yeah.
It's just they either got
they either got COVID from him or the prostitutes that he brought with him. So
exactly.
All right. So, and then the Canes, their games have been postponed till Sunday. So it's one or two games, I think. Not a huge thing, but
yeah.
There's been some COVID action. There's COVID action.
It's my favorite kind of news. I love talking about it. It's so fun. Instead of talking about, you know, sports and stuff.
So did we cover Mike Stone yet? Because Mike Stone obviously has.
No, we didn't. But I literally, the words came out of my mouth in the last one. We were talking about Richie. And I said, I can't wait for Mike Stone to sign. And then he signed the next day.
Look, if we didn't know this was going to happen. Right. We probably would have had a big love letter signed up and everything, but like nobody's surprised by this. I don't think.
Of course it was going to have. It's like, have you traced how much money they've invested into this guy? Like, okay, I get that he's a nice guy and stuff. But like, hasn't this organization done like gone a bit above and beyond for Michael Stone here?
The best thing about it is that we're still paying him his buyout money. And this is what, the third time we signed him since then?
So they traded for him back in, I'm going to pull up what the draft pick turned into because I don't know off the top of my head. They traded for him back in what, 2016? Was that what it was?
Dude, I've tried to blank out all of Mike Stone from my memory. So
they traded for him. Then they signed him to like what, a 3-year extension in 2017? 3-year extension worth like how many millions of dollars? That was a pretty big contract.
What was that? Was it two, three?
He signed a 3-year, $10.5 million contract in 2017.
Yikes.
Then he was bought out, as you remember, last year. So that incurs a cap hit of $1.16 million that ends at the end of this year. Then he was re-signed last year while still being on the books for a buyout. And he's back again. So
Bradtree Living sure loves to spend money.
My quick math is like, what, 11 and a bit? They've invested $11 million into Michael Stone. What's going on here? I get that he's a nice guy, and people are always like, oh, he's just there for depth. Why? I don't get it. Why? Why is he there for depth? He sucks. Why would you have somebody who sucks for depth? I don't understand. Listen,
he's got a good shot, okay? So when he gets 3 shots a season, like one
blast
of them
those win. Blast those slap shots into the glass, almost kills poor somebody who's standing in front of the net. I don't know. It's just so inefficient use of money. Like,
well, and it comes back to this thing. You're always kind of giving Bradtree Living a hard time about, does this guy even have a vision, right? And this is another prime example. It's like the fourth time he's re-signed Stone in the last 3 years. How do you do that? How do you sign one player? I guess it's 3 times technically. The same player.
I wouldn't mind it so much if he wasn't so bad at hockey.
But it's
not like he's only been bad recently. He's been bad since they got him. It's just like, and you know, he's probably going to play ahead of Shillington probably now. Like, that's the other thing that just pisses me off. Like,
you think maybe?
I think he will. I really do.
I don't think right now they have him slotted ahead of Shillington.
Yeah, you'll be surprised.
Well, no, I won't be surprised, but
it's just, I don't know.
I'm not surprised with this anymore. Like, I've come to accept it as much as I'm disappointed about it. But
like, in what history has a team traded for a player, signed the player, bought the player out, re-signed him, brought him on a PTO, sent him to put him on waivers, and then signed him?
The thing is, like, is this the first player in history that has signed with a team twice after being bought out by that same team?
Oh, it's got to be the first time.
It's got to be.
Like, it's just, I don't get it. He must be a really, really nice guy. I just don't get why you're spending the extra $700K on a guy who you're already paying on a buyout. It just makes no sense to me.
Anyways. Okay, did you find the where does the money go from Team Fiennes?
Well, I Googled it, but my Google wording wasn't particularly accurate, and I couldn't.
Don't worry about it. I just thought maybe if you did, we'd throw it in there. So
where do NHL Team Fiennes go?
Thoughts on Markstrom's pads. Did you see those?
Oh, damn. They look good.
So if you haven't seen these yet, just, I don't know, Google Markstrom Blasty pads outfit, whatever, uniform. But did you hear the Canucks fan base is a little triggered over this?
Yeah, and I kind of understand. It looks like the Flying V Canuck colors.
Well, dude,
because it is.
It is. If I'm the Vancouver Canucks, I'm a little triggered right now because, A, we lost half our team to the Calgary Flames.
Yeah.
B, we just lost 2 straight to the Calgary Flames. C, they stole the retro colors for the hockey skate, and now Markstrom's
flaunting it.
He's flaunting it.
Honestly, I actually like Markstrom's retro setup because he's not wearing just the white pads. He's got those nice, the colored ones, and his stick is red. I don't know why that is so cool, but it looks great when his stick is red. But damn, I hope he's. I don't think he will because have you heard they're wearing the black flag. Black Sea flag jerseys on Sunday.
Yes, yes.
I kind of hope he wears those black pads with that jersey because that would look dope.
He's not going to.
Come on, do it. Like Tyler Parsons had a setup with that were like black like that with the black C flag jersey, and it looks sweet.
Who's the guy that wore like the old school brown pads and what brown?
Wasn't that Riddick in the Heritage Classic last year?
Was that Riddick?
I think it was. Yeah, they lost that game, but that looks sweet.
So on other league news pertaining to the Flames, Pettersson gets fined the maximum amount, which is not really that much. It's about $4,000 for slashing Sean Monahan right underneath the face. I don't
know. In his neck?
I don't know if he actually clipped him or not. But, dude, I watched that again before recording this, and it's just like, dude, what was he thinking?
Well, you know, I don't think he was.
It's like, it's not, his stick was nowhere near, right? It's not like he could make an argument. He was trying to, you know, get his stick in and just,
yeah, you know, no, lost control. He was just mad.
He just literally got frustrated and slashed Sean Monahan like 2 inches below the throat.
My favorite react, does Sean Monahan, is he like a stoic for all time? Does the dude show no emotion?
Never.
He just literally got slashed like in the neck. And he looks like it was just a breeze. He's just like totally, totally fine. Like, Sean Monahan is cold. He's hockey player's hockey player. He's got ice water in his veins.
Yeah. And it's funny. Sometimes you see that, eh? Someone gets like literally high stick right in the face and they don't even like try to embellish at all. They just keep skating. There's not a call. It's like, you could have sold that. Like Monahan, like you could sell that a little bit. If that was Chucky, right?
Probably Chucky would be laying on the...
Probably would have bit down on his lip and made himself bleed. And...
Exactly. Sean Monahan. Yeah, I don't know. Pettersson's not that kind of player. I think he was just mad and kind of like...
No, it sounded... I didn't see it, but it sounded by the broadcast, I think, is... What's his nuts? The play-by-play.
Rudy?
No, the other guy.
Leslie. Rick Ball.
Ball. I think Ball said that he said... Pettersson went over to Gio after, Monty after, to see if he was okay.
Yeah. Honestly, I hope the Flames sign Pettersson when he's up next year. That's my dream.
That would be unbelievable.
That's my dream. But I like Markstrom's pads, triggering those Canucks fans. I don't know, man. These it's been three games, and like I've almost done a complete 180 on my feelings for Jacob Markstrom.
What do you mean almost?
I've done a complete 180.
I guess it's still what? It's still early in the season. Right?
Well, and it's totally psychological too.
Well, but that's the thing is psychologically, I'm not terrified.
Right? I'd almost shit my pants anytime the puck is like in the general vicinity of the Flames net, even though it's like 3-0.
Yeah. And it's so weird. It's like the frog in the boiling water experiment. It's like, I can't, having Markstrom now watching him is making me realize what we got accustomed to in the last 3 years under Mike Smith and then David Riddick having some of the similar issues. It's like, dude, that's not normal to be freaky. I don't think it is. It's not normal to be freaking out every time a puck even goes remotely close to the net from any area of the ice.
I know. And I think it really started with the Brian Elliott thing for sure. Like that's, we all have PTSD from that. That playoff series in Anaheim where Elliott completely shit the bed. And then it just kind of continued with Mike Smith and Riddick continuing the tradition of letting the worst possible goal in at the worst possible time. So it's just PTSD. And it's like we've been in therapy for three games with Markstrom and we're like healed now.
Yeah. So, and Koskinen is doing it right now in Edmonton.
Yeah, holy cow. They were lucky to win that game tonight because I just finished watching it. And the only reason they won was on a really shitty call. But, boy, he letting a stinker. Matthews shoots it below the goal line on a nice little turnover from Zach Cassian.
That was bad. Like, they have the best player in the world by a long shot. It's not even like, oh, yeah, he's the best player. I mean, some people might argue that other people might be. But he's like, by far and away.
It's not even close.
There's no one. Yeah. He's on our planet.
Yeah, there's this dumb thing going on where it's like, oh, I'd rather have MacKinnon. It's like, get the fuck out of here. Like, Connor McDavid is like an absolute animal out there. Are you kidding me?
You would only rather have MacKinnon because you hate the Oilers and you hate McDavid. But, dude, come on. Yeah, he's the best player in the world by far.
He's the best player in his – like, I think we can say that. Like, he's the best hockey player to ever play.
Second best.
To who?
Wayne.
Am I nickel and dime in the great one?
Wayne, baby. Wayne will always be number one. Okay.
I got to go back and watch some old Gretzky stuff.
Dude,
just it is just, weird though. Like you kind of think like, oh, it wasn't that good. And then you go look at the point totals and it's like, dude, fucking shit.
You want to talk about another planet? Wayne Gretzky is in another freaking solar system, dude.
Yeah, there's that. Galaxy. There's that distribution of point scores. Have you ever seen that?
Yeah.
And it's just like Gretzky's like an insane outlier. It's like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Anyways, Oilers talk.
But yeah, Koskinen is struggling right now. He's in that place and goalie's going to funks, right? And he's in it. He's letting in those weak ones, those backbreakers. And you can tell, like, I don't know what was going on. Like, if the Oilers just played a solid defensive game tonight, it's Wednesday we're talking
about. It was a shitty game, actually. Like, yeah, I watched most really of the boring. Third period. And again, really like, boring. You'd expect those two teams to be like, it's going to be a 7-6 game. That was a gross hockey game. It was boring. There's nothing really happened. Yeah, it sucked.
Okay, so we got the 5-day break, and what are your thoughts on that? A lot of people, I didn't even really anticipate this coming. I think
me I was either. Just, I was like, wait, what?
We're all just so excited for the season to start. We're like, yeah, we're not really paying attention, and all of a sudden, oh yeah, we got 5 days off.
Yeah, it's totally dumb, but I mean, it's good for the Flames, and it's actually really good timing, seeing as Dubé got hurt.
Yeah,
so more rest is good in a shortened season, but it's kind of annoying from a watching perspective.
But is there an argument here? Because in the past, I think it was both the past two seasons, right before we go on a 5-day break, we're like going on a heater and it ruined our heater both times.
Yeah. Like that even happened at the All-Star break the year they won the West.
Yeah.
Like they were cruising and then the All-Star break happened and they were kind of sucked.
I don't necessarily feel like it's going to be the same situation because it's not mid-season, right?
Yeah, and I mean, for all, like, sure, they've got 5 out of 6 points, and they've had some good stretches, but it's not like we're on this, like, 10-game win streak where we've been playing lights-out hockey. They've been okay, but you've played Winnipeg and 2 games against Vancouver, both of whom you should beat when you, like, most nights. So I'm not super worried about it.
And so the Dubé thing, it sounds like it's not serious at all. Jeff Ward saying it's not serious. And it sounds like he might even be back for Sunday's game against the Leafs.
Yeah, I say he's day to day. So, I mean, 5 days off, I'd be probably surprised.
Now, it sounded like they said it was lower body. Obviously, they don't get into it. Did you hear lower body?
Yeah, I heard lower body. That's what they were reporting today. I had thought because they were trying to track it down and I watched it and the only thing they could find was maybe a slash from Pettersson on the hand. So I thought maybe it was a hand thing, but I guess it's a lower body thing.
Or maybe it is the hand. They're just saying that.
Maybe they're just psyching everybody out.
Okay, let's get into the game breakdown. That was a fun game. Boy, was there sure a lot of nice goals.
Well, it started off horribly. Like the Flames got, I don't know, I guess they thought maybe it was an 8 o'clock start or something.
Oh, yeah.
Like, true. Dude, they got demolished in the first period. The scoring chances were like, what, 16-4 or something? Not that high, but it was crazy. The Flames got absolutely dominated in that first period. And again, like, man, how nice is it to have Markstrom?
It's really nice. Even though Riddick was playing that role, you know, for the first third of last season as well, where the guys would just stink out the joint and he would just get left out the dry, but he would keep them in games.
Yeah.
So it was nice to see them respond.
Oh, yeah, totally. That's what, because usually what we see is they hang the goalie out to dry for the entire game.
Yeah. Like, I honestly, during that first period, I felt bad for Markstrom.
Oh, me too. I posted it and I don't have it in front of me, but like they got absolutely smoked in the first. Like it was ridiculous.
Yeah, the Corsi was like 15% to 85%.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. So Markstrom really held them in it. And again, like maybe this is all in my mind, but the dude really does seem to have stylistically and technically, he's a lot more calm in the net than Dave and probably Talbot too. Like he's just like, he's not giving up those second, third, fourth chances. Like he's not scrambling all the time.
Yeah. And he does, you can tell he covers more He covers more net too.
Yeah, and for some reason I didn't realize that he's a fucking monster. Dude is huge.
Yeah. He is.
Yeah, he the only reason the Flames weren't coming out of that period 3-0 down is because of Jacob Markstrom.
Yeah. And then him holding him in the game late too, right? Like after the second and, you know, halfway through the third period, Canucks had no business being that game after that.
The Flames absolutely took over in period two. So, okay, I got it here. Shots in period one, 16-4 for Vancouver, 17 shot attempts, 8 for the Flames. And the expected goal rate was, like you said, well over 80% for the Canucks. And then in period two, the Flames had 20 shots. Vancouver had 3. The Flames, like, they took over in that period.
Yeah, total role reversal.
And quality shots, too. So they flipped the switch, which was good to see.
Like, and let's get into the goals, because it's one of those things where, hey, when you're trailing and you're getting your ass kicked, and then so they come into the second period and, you know, they're starting to take a little bit of the playback, but they're not really getting those high danger chances that you're hoping to, you know, feed off at least to build some momentum. I thought Johnny's goal was pretty pivotal. That's a TSN turning point right there.
Yeah.
He gets you back in the game.
Instantly, oh, totally.
Right. And it's not to me, I didn't see it as one of those situations where your team is taking over, you know, momentum of the game. It's just inevitable. Like they had to, is kind of a threshold that they had to, you know, break through and get that first goal. And our boy, right, Johnny Gaudreau. And there's something to be said when you look back throughout a season and you're looking at, you know, the key goals that players score at what time in the game, whether it's a tying game, whether it's a tying goal or a go-ahead goal, those are always more emphasis and value put on those goals than if, you know, obviously an empty netter, but if it's already, you know, 3-1, you pot a fourth one like Gio's, right? So those goals that are either get you back tied or they get you go ahead. You know, that was awesome to see him get that one, and 5-on-5 too, right?
Yeah, no, totally. And I thought like the shift that really kind of started to turn the momentum and got us jazzed was a Gaudreau-Monahan shift that also included Matthew Tkachuk on their line.
Yes.
Because that's really where I started to be like, okay, the Flames are going here. They got it going. Cause they really had a really good shift in the offensive zone. Didn't create anything super dangerous, but they controlled the play. And you could kind of tell from then on forth, they dominated the whole game. So the thing is when Gaudreau and Monahan, and how did you like Dominic Simone on their line?
Yeah, well, I didn't mind him.
Yeah, he was fine. Everybody's like, oh, once they put Simone, Gaudreau and Monahan got going. I was like, I don't think so. It was just they were going. It wasn't because Dominic Simone was all of a sudden there and Josh Leivo wasn't.
Like Simone was buzzing around, but yeah. Was he really generating much?
No. So the fact that Monahan and Gaudreau were getting it going, and again, like for all the shit they get lack of five on five success or whatever, I think that's total bullshit. Johnny Gaudreau has been one of the most productive 5-on-5 players in the league since he's entered the league.
Yep.
I think he's like 5th in 5-on-5 scoring or something. I don't know. He posted it the other day.
He is 5th.
Yeah. Like, so like this weird notion that, oh, he's only good on the power player and he sucks 5-on-5 is total bullshit. Like, dude is a good 5-on-5 player. And that shift was an exact reason why, especially when he's with Monahan, and they're cycling it and they're moving the puck with speed in the zone.
So, man, Monahan has looked good. And I know we said this at the start of last season, but it wasn't so much like, oh, Monty looks good. It just looked like he was playing a little bit bigger. It's not like he got bigger. And, you know, you could tell he had some more speed to his game at the start of last season. But, dude, the hands on this guy right now. And I don't know if he's just in a hot streak or how long we're going to see this, but dude, his playmaking ability on the offensive side of the red line is, from time to time, he looks pretty lost in the defensive zone, I'll admit, but
oh, yeah.
When he gets in the offensive zone, like he's making like really high skilled plays, whether he's, you know, threading it through 4 guys or he's pulling guys to him. Like that one, was it 2 games ago when he hit the post, we did that toe drag?
Yeah, like right in, he was like on like a 1-on-3 kind of thing, and he kind of just like dragged it around.
Yeah, I'm seeing like 2 or 3 plays a night right now. It's only been 3 games, but
yeah. But I mean, listen, like I think we did a show on this in the summer last year, like pretty much defending Monahan and Gaudreau. It's like, I kind of think this Sean Monahan sucks thing has been overblown. Like, even though I do agree a lot of his success hinges on Gaudreau, like, he's still a very good offensive player.
Well, he's the best goal scorer we've had since, what, Joe Nieuwendijk? Or obviously right? Jerome McGinley, but...
Yeah, I don't think you can just, like, throw him to the side when it's like, he scored more goals than anybody in his draft class. A draft class that includes guys like Barkov and McKinnon and Lindholm. And we just, he sucks now. Oh, he sucks. He's terrible. Shouldn't even be in the league. He should be your third line center. It's like, no way. Like, Sean Monahan, not good in his own zone. Not an elite number one center, but he's very good in the offensive zone. And he can create a lot of offense. And I think this he sucks thing has kind of got overblown. And
well,
when you see him have shifts like that with Gaudreau, you're reminded, yeah, he's a good offensive player.
Yeah. And not only that, like, we're talking one season.
He's yeah, only exactly. Had, it's he's an only outlier.
He's only had one season where the fan base reacted like that under a coach and a coaching system that did not play to his strengths.
Totally.
They could try to force him to become a defensive player. And maybe we should touch on that because Jeff Ward he's redeemed himself. He's
making adjustments. Got to give him credit.
He's making the much-needed adjustments, giving these guys more offensive zone starts, less defensive zone starts, which is pretty – we were pretty scared because, you know, going into – looking back at last season and even the playoffs and then game number one, you know, there's this narrative being pushed that we want to become a defensive team and, you know, we want Monty and Johnny become, you know, defensive experts, and – but they're not. They're not going to be. So for him to make that adjustment from game one and have giving them more offensive zone starts and less defensive zone starts, yeah, he obviously is he figured it out or someone hipped him to the fact. I don't know, but it's nice to see that adjustment being made.
Oh, totally. And I mean, you saw it again, like two nights in a row, Elias Pettersson was a non-factor.
Yeah.
And like you're telling me having Michael Backlund in a shutdown role playing against Elias Pettersson, like that is working so much right now when you can have Lindholm and Kachuk. And by the way, we'll get to the other goals in a minute. Lindholm and Kachuk have been unbelievable.
Whoa. Yeah.
And then when you can have Gaudreau and Monahan doing what they do and then have Backlund, like this is what we've been saying for years, it seems like if you could have Backlund be your 3C, not that he's a 3C, but then you can utilize him in like a shutdown role.
Yep.
Like, man, at least Pettersson was invisible. Michael Backlund and Andrew Mangiapane when he was playing with them, that Michael Backlund line nailed their assignment of shutting down at least Pettersson in 2 straight games. So that sure helps.
What are they going to do for the Leafs? And obviously we should give kudos to Jeff Ward for, you know, coming up with these pairings and sticking to them because it really, that comes down to a coaching decision that is working. And if he can stick with it, he's going to be able to give Monty and Johnny better matchups, which is what we've seen, right?
Yeah, like totally.
What line was that they scored that 5-on-5 goal against?
I'd have to double check, but it definitely wasn't the did JT Miller play? No, he didn't play.
Yeah,
he did.
Yep.
Yeah, it wasn't the JT Miller line. I mean, Vancouver's forward group is pretty rank, but.
But given this scenario, right, with these three lines, say Dubé's back. How do you want to match up against Toronto Maple Leafs?
Well, yeah, I'm just looking at it. The Gaudreau line was out against the Jay Beagle line, which is like, I think Johnny Gaudreau could feast on Jay Beagle and Tyler Mott all day long.
Yep.
I think
they got quite a few matchups against those guys. So
yeah,
whether that's Ward doing intentionally or not, it probably is. So.
I mean, against the Maple Leafs, it's going to be interesting because they have kind of been fiddling with their lines. Sounds like Joe Thornton's hurt, so they'll probably have to go back to the Hyman with Hyman plays usually with Matthews and Marner, I think. So if Joe Thornton's not in, but again, it's a long time away. I'm just going to pull up the Leafs lines here. Like you're probably going to go head to head Lindholm versus Matthews, I imagine. Unless you throw the back line against them. Man, the Leafs have a good forward group. If it were me, I would go the Lindholm line straight up against the Matthews line and then have the back line go against the Tavares Nylander line. And then Johnny Imani can go out against Kerfoot and Mikhaev. But, dude, like, the way Elias Lindholm...
You know, looking at their lives, they're not as deep as...
You might think.
They don't look as deep as I kind of...
Well, they got the big four, and then I think Mikhaev and Hyman are pretty underrated players. But there's some gap. There's some holes in their lineup. Like, Jimmy VC has been playing with Tavares, I guess. Meh. That fourth line's pretty meh.
Yeah.
But I mean, dude,
well, the bottom sixes.
Yeah. The way Lindholm, like, honestly, like, I have been blown away. Like, if you look at Lindholm and Kachuk's numbers, like, over three games, 5-on-5, it's incredible. They're like 75, yeah. They're like in the 70% expected goals, 4% in same range possession wise. Like, they have been playing perfect. Like, I said this against the Canucks the other night when Kachuk is like, he played a perfect hockey game. Like, he was so good. And it was like, again, like him and Lindholm, like every time they're on the ice, they're not making mistakes so far. They're pushing play up the other way and they're just dominating out there 5-on-5. It's three very strong games from those two guys.
Yeah. So if you're Jeff Ward, you got home ice advantage against the Leafs coming up, back-to-back games. You think you do your best to match up. Would you rather match up Lindholm, Chucky, and whoever it's going to be, probably Dubé, let's hope, against Matthews and Marner? Or would you rather the matchup against Tavares and Nylander?
I think I'd probably go Matthews and Marner with the Lindholm line. Like, I think the Lindholm line, not that Matthews and Marner are problems in their own zone, but I think Lindholm, right, and Chuck,
can exploit them.
Yeah, a little bit. I think Lindholm and Kachuk could take advantage of that matchup, possibly.
See, I almost kind of like...
I don't know. The one thing is those guys are so fast. Kachuk's... Not that it really needs to matter with who's up front. It might be more on... That might be the D matchup that's more important. But Marner and Matthews are so fast in transition. Kachuk's not the greatest skater. Neither is Lindholm. So that... I don't know.
I think I like Chucky and Lindholm... matched up against Tavares and Nylander.
Just do the
size factor and maybe the speed factor, and then you match up Backlund, Monge.
The only question is, though, if Dubé's out and they're putting Steamboat, the USS Lucic on Michael Backlund's wing.
Dude, come on.
That's what they're doing.
Yeah, who went up? It was Mangiapane went up?
Monge went to the top line, which I love that. I don't love the Dubé's hurt, but Mangiapane with Kachuk and Lindholm is money. Simone went up to play with Gaudreau and Monahan. Levo dropped down to play with Backlund, and Lucic went up to play with Backlund. And I don't like that one bit.
Yeah, so we'll see. And you've said this a few times. It's like, if you have one injury, like what?
So funny because, like, on the radio, like, Wills and stuff, they're always, like, bragging about how much depth. It's like, I just can't believe how much depth this team has. It's just, it's incredible. And then it's like, okay, Dubé's out. It's like, oh, who's on deck? Oh, Nordstrom? Oh, great.
Yeah.
So, I can't deal. There's no way I don't know what, they seem to like this Lucic Backlund connection. They were rolling that in camp too. They seem to kind of be fond of that for some reason.
And let's get to this. Like, how bad did Lucic look,
dude?
At many points in the last three games, like especially the last game, dude.
He
took two penalties that were like, dude, what are you doing?
Well, and I mean, people are kind of turning the puck over. Yeah, exactly. That's what I was gonna say.
Every time he gets the puck, it's a turnover. Like, he's a turnover machine.
Like, and not, it's not even a forced turnover. It's totally unforced.
Yeah.
Like, just like the worst possible play you could make. And that's like the one thing that you ask of him. It's like, okay, you're slow as shit. You don't do much in the offensive zone. Just be responsible defensively. And he hasn't been doing that. And I've seen some people being like, oh yeah, well, he's been fine. He made the hit on the Geo goal and he was in the screen on the Dubé goal. It's like, I'm pretty sure both of those plays probably would end up happening regardless, and it doesn't excuse the other dumb shit he didn't. Like, I'm sorry, the dude just looked terrible at 5-on-5.
Yeah, he has. He can't be that much of a liability.
Like he has been this the first few games this year, kind of what I expected him to be last year. Like, you know, when we were freaking out, I was like, no, we got Lucci, he's gonna be terrible.
Yeah, so we'll see how this progresses. I think you'll see him clean it up a bit, honestly. And it might be one of those things, you know, with the older cars, you got to let the engine heat up before you drive it away.
Those tripping penalties, though, dude, like, what is he doing?
Dude, those were both of them, the complete bonehead. Bonehead.
Like, absolutely brutal.
Yeah. So he's kind of in my, you know.
Me too. And right I just started to, I just, I was just starting to like the guy.
Well, don't throw him under the bus yet. Let's give him a few more games. I think he'll, once he's probably one of those guys where just does not benefit from not playing hockey for as long as these guys haven't. He's still rusty. And I think that's what we're seeing.
The other thing that I liked after the Gaudreau goal was like something we saw was a key to this Flames team's success in 18-19 was the quick strike. So Gaudreau scores and then Backlund scores like, I think it was almost the next shift.
Yep.
And then Lindholm scores like 5 minutes later. Like that quick strike, like
waves.
Yeah. Put them away. Right. Like that's the Flames had an ability to do that. Not that it's like killer instinct. Maybe it is. But in that really good year, they were really able to do that. Like close it down. It's like, okay, game over.
And that third goal, man.
Oh, dude.
That is some elite shit right there. I created that quick little video. That slow-mo saucer angle pass, dude.
The puck comes like a foot off the ice.
That Johnny makes from, you know, close to the half boards. Yeah, it just like lands right in the wheelhouse and is so quick, dude, the back of the net. Like, no one's stopping that.
The power play is firing on all cylinders right now.
Yes, it's looking good.
And it is looking really good. And it looks a lot... It looks a lot more dynamic than it did last year. They seem to have Gaudreau. I wish they would do this more often because, like, on the goal you saw, Gaudreau on his off wing to Lindholm on his off wing, one-timers.
Yep.
I still wish they would do that more often where they switch wings because it just opens up so much more.
Yeah, like, they're, you know, we've harped on this a lot. Their one-set play in the power play is half boards down to Chucky real quick, back up to Monty in the slot, and they scored – in game number one with that, and I think you said, you're like, okay, great. Now they scored once, so you're just going to try it like for another 50 times. And it's, I don't know. The way Chucky fed that through, it's hard to defend.
Yeah.
But that play has to be so perfect. They nailed it that one time. It's, you got to execute that so perfect for it to work.
Well, yeah. And I think you got to execute perfectly and you have to do it at the correct time. Like the problem I have with that, like, I like that play. I think that play works really well. I think if they did it on the other side, it might work a little bit better because then Monahan has a better angle. And if Lindholm's down low, which we've seen a little bit, I think he could feed it in front a little easier. So if they gave that play, that low high play, a little bit of a different look from time to time, it would be less easy to defend. Because like Hamonic was on the ice when they scored that goal, and then they tried it again, like first thing. On Saturday night or whenever that was, Monday night. And Hamonic was like, oh yeah, I see it coming. And he blocked it. So Hamonic had a couple rough games, by the way, holy shit. But power play is looking good.
And he said, it's a good play. And if it's going to work, but it can't be your primary go-to. You gotta have way more. And they've been doing this way more cross ice passes, right?
Yeah, totally.
When you fire the puck across the ice like that, it moves, it opens everything up. Everybody on the ice has to move with the puck.
I think that play works best when it is when Johnny's on the left wing and he does a cross ice pass to Lindholm, and it looks like Lindholm has if Lindholm's a threat to shoot, if it crosses like the middle of the ice and comes to Lindholm and then he goes to Chucky and then it's to Monahan, that works a lot better than if it's just Lindholm has the puck down to Chucky, then he forces that to Monahan because everybody can see where that's going. If it comes to Lindholm first on a pass across, A, that's more dangerous because Lindholm's in a better spot to shoot it and he can be more of a threat to shoot. You have to respect the shot. And B, it gets the goalie moving one way where like you want him moving that way for Monahan to be able to finish it. So,
did you hear what Chucky said about Lindholm?
Was it post game?
No, it's like it during the game. I think it was Rick Ball mentioned it that, or maybe it was Rudy. One of them said that, you know, they were talking to Chucky and Chucky said like Lindholm is one of the best goal scorers.
Right. Goal scorers. Yeah, I did hear that. Well, he is a pretty good goal scorer. He's a good finisher.
Say everybody should see that soon. But I mean, we saw it last year. Great. He's a great finisher.
Yeah. He scored 30 goals pretty much 2 years in a row. So.
So, I mean, Johnny's putting him away at a pretty good clip here. There's like four guys that could be in the running for leading this team in goals. I think it'll be Monty and Lindholm 1-2. What do you think?
Yeah, you know what? I still think Johnny could score, could get back to that like that pace he scored at in that other, because he does shoot a lot. That's like, he shoots a lot more than people think. I think he'll score some goals this year, and we're already seeing it. I think Monahan. Yeah, Monahan's good. I think Johnny and Monahan are going to lead this team in goals.
Speaking of shooting, Mark Giordano still has it.
Sure does. How about that blast?
Dude, that is one of my favorite goals to watch on a replay slow-mo when the angle is from behind the defenseman and the angle is like looking down and you can see just how the puck travels through the air and goes past the goalie. I fucking love that angle.
That was a beauty. I love when you can see where it's going right into the back of the mesh and is, ugh. And I thought that was, Gio had the power play goal, which is great, but I thought that was Gio and Rask's or Anderson's best game as a pairing. Cause through the first two games, not that they were bad, but I didn't think they were as good as they should have been. They're a lot better against the Canucks on Monday.
And Gio with a celly of the night for sure.
Yeah, that was good.
The nice little fist bump.
Although I did like I like Johnny's fist bump too. So.
Yes, me too. Rash Daddy gets the empty netter and he has a nice little celly himself. Hey, that little smile he gives.
That was sweet. I thought Valimaki I thought he struggled a little bit. He had a penalty. He had that one shift that was rough. But again, he was still pretty good.
Yeah, a few turnovers outside of the few turnovers. It was like it was maybe like eight minute stretch that he was just like, dude, this guy's struggling.
Yeah, and but it was in the first period where I think like everybody sucked.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's still hard for me to gauge. Like we've played Winnipeg and Vancouver, two teams that I think a lot of people projected will probably be on the outside. Vancouver kind of always does this. They don't really start the season off strong and then they kind of find their form, you know, after maybe 8-10 games and then they get pretty good for a while. So I don't think we saw a Vancouver team that is playing anywhere remotely close to, you know, their best hockey.
Oh, no way.
I think the Jets probably were. So the fact that we probably should have beat the Jets, but, you know, we had some kind of issues in that game. So I don't know. I'm just trying to gauge, like, from the competition we've seen so far, where do we really fit? But I have, like, I've liked the game, especially in the last two games.
Yeah. No, me too. Like, I'm kind of, like, telling, like, because people are freaking out, right? They're like, oh, we're going to be good. Oh, we're so good. It's like, hey, we've played the Jets and the Canucks. You need to beat those guys.
The Canucks didn't have JT Miller the first game, and they haven't looked that great.
Well, again, did you even notice Elias Pettersson like once in either of those two games, other than when only he slashed when Monahan in the neck?
He's slashing guys in the neck.
So they're not firing on all cylinders by any means right now. But again, you can only play the games that are in front of you, and the Flames have done a pretty good job. Like they were absolutely, that second period was probably one of the most dominant periods we've seen in a long time.
The encouraging thing is they've dominated all three teams at, you know, lengthy points within each game. So,
yeah. And you haven't seen any extended periods, like maybe the first period against the Canucks on Monday. But again, Markstrom held you in there. Like you haven't seen any, like you're like, holy shit, not this again, right? Like you're like, here's the old Flames. It's just like, for the most part, all three games, while they probably haven't played a full 60 yet, like the majority of the games, there haven't been like huge stretches where they're getting completely outplayed. So I think that's encouraging. So this test against Toronto will be the first real test. But again, like, I just keep coming back to the fact that it's like, this team won the Western Conference not that long ago. You know?
Yeah. Like, no, they're clicking pretty good.
There's no way they're as bad as they were last year.
No. I think if you're looking at the next eight games should tell us quite a bit, because you got the Leafs at home back-to-back. Then you go into Montreal, and Montreal has looked pretty good. I don't know. I know they're playing right now. I don't know if they're up or down, but Montreal, you play them three times in Montreal. Then you're back in Winnipeg for another rematch, and Winnipeg's going to be pretty competitive. They might actually squeeze out that final playoff spot. We'll see how Edmonton fares out. And then you got the Oilers after that. So, you know, you're looking at three, maybe the other three best teams in the division in the Leafs, Montreal, Winnipeg, as far as how they're playing right now anyways. And then Edmonton was just kind of like, you never know what to expect with them. They're kind of like a weirder version than us. Like, their Jekyll and Hyde is almost weirder than ours, if you can believe it, because ours is so predictable.
Yeah.
At least it has been the last, you know, two seasons, or the last season, I guess. Whereas the Oilers, like, you just don't know. You don't know if Connor McDavid is going to score six goals and you're going to, you know, you're going to have to put up nine goals to beat them, or they're going to focus on defense and you just need to score two goals to beat them. Like,
it's very well put. It's like that game where he scored that hat trick and Drysdale had like whatever 5 points. It was like, holy shit, are they going to go like 56-0 and McDavid's going to have like 180 points? They just looked so good. It was insane. But then you watch them tonight and you're like, what is that? Even though they, like, it's just the
last two games,
even though they won, it was just like, ugh, yuck. So they're unpredictable, but yeah, this will be because I think you can split the teams into competitiveness between like Montreal, Calgary, Toronto as kind of like tier one, and then Edmonton, Winnipeg, Vancouver is kind of tier two. So playing the Leafs and Habs back to back will be really telling. The Leafs haven't been super great though, I gotta say.
No, they haven't. I think Montreal might have has looked the best, if, or maybe the Flames. The Flames in Montreal have been kind of the two teams rolling right now.
Yeah, I've been pretty, like, again, the Oilers are so good at creating offense, but they can't really play defense. I think Montreal has looked the best for me, probably, in terms of their all-round game. The Leafs have been a bit disappointing. And Friedman is saying something interesting on his podcast. He was talking about how back in the Washington Capitals days when they were trying to win the cup back in like 09, 08, stuff like that, and they would like bring in all these guys to the deadline, and Bruce Boudreau had said, like, I have too many new guys. It's like, right. He says sometimes there's like so many new guys it can really affect stuff. It's like the Leafs have a lot of new guys, man. So that can maybe be a factor. Yeah,
they're kind of like these, you know, whether it be Marlow, now it's Thornton, Spezza, right?
The Simmons. Kind
of
these guys
at the end of their career, right?
Yeah. I don't know. I'm curious to get a good look at the Leafs.
I guess, you know, in a sense, it makes sense because, right, are you really counting on those guys to create a gel, right? There has to be a gel already formed.
Yeah.
Some guys can come in and do that, but these outsiders are probably, you know, trying to feel out the team themselves. And, you know, it doesn't help that we're on such a weird timeline on this planet right now, but I could see that.
Yeah. And I think something else, just kind of an unrelated point that I'm just thinking of now, it's like, I think that's why trade Monahan for PLD. Oh, trade split up Gaudreau Monahan. Maybe this chemistry, because I noticed Haley Salvian, who's the new Athletic beat reporter for the Flames, she was like tweeting about, like, wow, I didn't realize Monahan and Gaudreau had such good chemistry. It's like, yeah, they have great chemistry. Maybe in this shortened season, maybe stuff like that will be more important than regularly. It's like guys who have played together for so long, who click so well, like maybe that'll be a more important factor. I don't know. But I mean, I think Montreal's looked the best. The Flames still are probably generating enough high octane offense. They're still playing kind of like low event, boring, which is fine if they're winning. But that's kind of how Jeff Ward's kind of got it going. It's like lower events, control everything. So
the power play, man, has been
The power play is one. The power play and the penalty kill have won you two games, pretty much.
Yeah. Okay. We're gonna do this thing probably to wrap it up, this Wired versus Tired, Wired and Tired. Where did this even start? Like, I know I've seen this around, Wired and Tired. Where does Wired even come from? Like,
I don't know. It's some internet thing that's like, how are these things born? I don't even know. Like, so it's just a meme.
But Wired is like, why is Wired good?
Because then you're like, you're jazzed up. Okay, well, I've got it pulled up here on knowyourmeme.com. Tired/Wired is a phrasal template used to express the fading cultural significance of one subject in regards to a newer one, i.e. shot chaser.
Okay, so there you go. Whether into this, whatever. give me your three Wired. Give me your three Tired.
Well, they might be different than yours. So my three Wired. Number one, Wired. Rasmus Anderson on the power play.
That a boy.
Me, is that looking good? And I wasn't a huge proponent of this. I'm digging it.
Because I think last podcast, you were a little unsure. You were thinking Gio. At the time, I agree with you. Gio still looks great on PP2, but I think he just ties PP2 together so well. It's nice having Rasmus on PP1.
The shift that kind of made this a Wired for me was the 5-on-3 goal shift, where Rasmus looks like he's winding up for that clapper, and Jay Beagle is still looking for his jockstrap. Jay Beagle like slid out to center ice on that fake. He created so much havoc on that play just because he was threatening to shoot. Right hand shot seems to add a different element. I'm liking Rastaddy on the PP Wired.
And didn't Valimaki have a nice little? He did one of those too. Deke somebody out.
Guys, they got balls of steel.
Okay, so Wired number one for me is Johnny Gaudreau doing Johnny Gaudreau things.
Yeah, baby.
This guy is, hey, we've been Flames fans long enough. We've had the pleasure to watch Johnny Gaudreau long enough that when Johnny Gaudreau is going, that means he's doing Johnny Gaudreau things. He's bringing the puck to the center of the ice. He's cutting into the middle of the ice once he gets over the blue line. That's the danger area. That's where you're going to open up all the seams. He's not stuck on the perimeter. He's dangling, right? He's even seems to be dialed in as a threat in front of the net as far as scoring goes. And my God, him on the power play, just the way he dishes it around. And so for me, he's got me wired.
I love it. And I mean, like, again, like the power play puck movement, man, he's good. Like, it's just, you kind of forget, like, and how hard those little plays that he makes. Just in tight and like that sauce pass, man.
Something else. Like, he truly is one of those guys where it's a pleasure to watch him play hockey. Like, he's worth the price of admission just to be like, dude, how does that guy do that? Even if it doesn't lead to any goals or whatever, he's doing five plays per game that there's like a small, small handful of guys in the league that can execute that. He's totally. Just a wizard.
All right, my Wired number two, Matthew Tkachuk. Tkachuk. Wow, geez. Apparently, ooh, I have a speech impediment.
I don't mind that. Tkachuk.
Tkachuk. There's some words I struggle to say. I should have maybe been held back in like grade one or something. Phonics. Matthew Tkachuk drawing penalties.
Oh boy.
Because he had Canucks fans fucking salty on that one.
You want to talk about triggering? Man, Twitter was a buzz after that one.
That was
people
good.
Did not like that. I like, listen, how people were like, well, from what I saw on Twitter, people were like, oh, the embellishment, look at his embellishment. And I come in there and was like, yeah, that was fucking perfect.
It's smart. Right? That's like, the point. Dude,
not only did we get a penalty, was that the 5-on-3? Yeah, 5-on-3.
That was the goal.
We score a goal on the 5-on-3. It's just like, for some reason, man, when he draws penalties, we score on them.
Like, I mean, okay, number one, it was a penalty. Myers butted in him in the face.
If you're factoring the butt end, I don't know for sure if it was a butt end, but it kind of looked like it.
And like, you can kind of see it, like, but I mean, but regardless, Matthew Tkachuk,
this is my point. If that's Sean Monahan, he probably doesn't go down like that, right? He just stands there, and maybe it's not even a penalty because the ref, you know, there's not enough attention drawn to the situation. But dude, the guy is a penalty drawing master,
and he's good at it. He does the game. He doesn't do it all the time, which I think is the key, right? Like, he's not flopping and diving all the time.
No.
And do you know when to do it?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, it's an art form.
Yeah,
it exactly. is truly an art form. It's truly an art form.
So Wired.
All right. Wired for me, number two, Jacob Markstrom. Holy fuck. We have a goalie, folks. It is so weird. We talked about this. It's like, it's almost bizarre. Like, I have to pinch myself. Oh yeah. We have Markstrom back there. Right.
It's weird.
It's like a weird, dude, I seriously have PTSD because there's points in the game where I just feel like the anxiety building. And I'm like, oh God, are they going to score like some like wobbly puck, you know, just finds its way in and has that no business getting in. And then, you know, oh yeah, no, we got Markstrom back there.
Wrister from the blue line that beats him 5-hole.
Dude, if I have to ever see that again, and not only that, but man, you're talking about your goaltender being your best penalty killer. This guy has, look, we've had some pretty good penalty killing performances, you know, and Tanev's one of them, but Jacob Markstrom for me has been the best penalty killer in these first three games.
Well, and you know what? Like, even he just seems like such a pro too. Like, after the game, Francis was asking him dumb fucking questions, and he's just like super professional. Say. You know, like you I don't know. I don't know why it's just like he's super calming. I don't know if that's like I'm just totally buying into the hype, but it does seem to like he is like
I get that
totally
for sure.
Chilled out. He's like, totally calm.
He's like a soothing salve.
Yeah. So I agree. All right, my last Wired. I mean, it's hard not to like. I got to be honest. I've been blown away with Elias Lindholm at center. Like, nice. Remember when people were like, "Can he play center?" Fuck yeah, he can play center. Here's Elias Lindholm's night. He was over 90% expected goals for. 90.16 at 5-on-5, scored a clutch goal, was over 75% possession 5-on-5. Come on. Dude is a monster out there. Plays in all situations, played on the PK, scored a power play goal, dominated 5-on-5.
So good on the penalty kill.
So good.
My one area for him he's got to work on is when there's high pressure, right? We saw it versus Dallas. We also saw it, I think, in the
win. Decision making.
Like, you, dude, if he can clean that up instead of turning the puck over, he's trying to force plays, you know, in high pressure, you know, impact minutes of the game, whether it's late in the game and the other team's trying to tie it up or whatever it is. He's just got to take that one extra little tiny second and make sure that he's not giving the puck away. That's my only knock on him, man. And that's. It's only happened twice, right, in the last how long? So,
well, the Dallas one was a major fuck up. So,
well, that cost us the series. So,
yeah.
Well, anyways, so Wired for me, number three, Sean Monahan looks fucking deadly in the offensive zone, and this guy looks slick, man. I'm telling you, like, he looks like he has hands, I haven't seen Sean Monahan with these hands before. And I often say, like, this guy should shoot. He should be trying to make plays. He's the goal scorer. But, dude, I don't mind if he's making these plays when he's not in the slot, right? Because a lot of these plays I'm seeing in the high slot or when he's coming at through over the blue line, just like the way he's dishing it right now is deadly. And I don't see how now the defensive team has to defend against that. While the puck's going most likely to Johnny Gaudreau, and God, Johnny Gaudreau is going to do something wizardly. It's like, kudos to Sean Monahan. He's probably been my favorite guy to watch actually in this first three games so far.
Yeah. And it's like we said off the top, this is like, or in the middle of this, this overblown of Sean Monahan, this thing that Sean Monahan sucks has been totally overblown. He's not amongst the NHL's elite in the offensive zone, but he's elite in terms of creating offense, and he always has been. So let's cool it on the Sean Monahan's a piece of shit, trade him for nothing talk.
Cool it.
All right. Now the less fun ones, the tired.
Okay. I'll go first now.
Okay.
Number one, Lucic. Lucic, my guy, you look cooked. Oof. You look overdone, roasted.
Motherfucker.
Burnt. He looks burnt.
He's fried, bro.
Dude, I don't know. There's some connection between his brain and his hands and his feet. They're like on three different synchronicities. They're not linked up whatsoever. I don't know if it's a confidence thing or what it is. Like, it's funny because even last year, you know, I think when he first started playing, we're like, well, he's actually got some wheels to him once he gets going.
Yeah.
But I haven't really seen that speed factor at all. His feet have been a hindrance, in my opinion. And his hands, dude. It's like, whoa. Like, the communication time lapse between his brain telling his hands what to do is, like, way too slow. So, like I said, I'm not going to throw him under the bus yet because I think that once he gets a few more games under his belt, he's going to get that rust off. And I'm not saying he's going to be anything more than what we saw last year, but, dude.
Yeah.
And those penalties. Those penalties.
And especially because the penalties are caused because he is too slow and has hands of stone. Like, exactly. Lucic is like, you know, in Avengers and in Infinity War, Peter Dinklage's character, Eitri, the guy Thor goes to see and he's got his hands. Thanos has his hands frozen. That's what Lucic is like right now. All right, Mike.
I'll hand it to him, though. He still managed to contribute a bit there.
Right? Yeah.
Like, he did make that big hit. I think he got,
he got an assist on the back of the goal, too.
Yep. He was there. He was banging away, so he was part of that.
Yeah, but he's got to clean those things up.
You know, and then it was a nice screen, sure. But, like, come on. You're going to praise a guy for just screening?
Standing,
like,
in front of the net?
Anybody can screen.
Yeah. My first tired, and I honestly, I can't remember because now I'm just thinking, was this in the game the other night? Did Derek Ryan have that 2-on-0 on Monday or the game before?
Oh, dude, that was last night, last game.
Could it kill you to shoot, Derek?
Derek, you look uninterested. You look disinterested to me.
Could you shoot, like, the puck? You got to break away. You don't need to slow up and pull a Blake Como and wait for that guy to come.
You're 5 feet. I knew he was going to do that. You're five feet ahead of the guy. As soon as he looked back, I knew he was like, he's got no balls.
Yeah.
He doesn't have the balls enough to do it by himself. He's going to try and wait. It's just like, dude, to me, it's like you either have the killer instinct or you don't. That's not killer instinct. Like,
so, that's one of my more specific
tires. And not only is that easy to defend from a goalie's perspective, you ever notice that when players make that play, like, they never score on a goalie?
The 2-on-0 only works if you make two passes, usually.
Exactly.
Because, like, you really got to roof it, or, like, you got to pick your spot if you're shooting that, because what does the goalie have to do? Just push, get a good push off, and he can take up most of the net. The goalie doesn't even have to move very much.
No, he's definitely on my shit list to start the season off because I know how much skill he has. But, dude, like,
shoot the puck, buddy.
Nose dirty. Get your fucking nose dirty, man.
Shoot the puck, bro.
Anyways, okay, good one. Number two for me is Sam Bennett. What the hell are you doing? Like,
oh, geez.
I get it. You're benched. You're on the fourth line, you know, for most of the game against Winnipeg. And then, you know, you get a shift and you absolutely dominate. And now you're on the third line. And you follow it up with just two completely idiotic penalties. Like, can you not help yourself? I know we talked about this on the last podcast, but can he not?
No, he can't. Like, this is who he is, man.
But maybe if he knew he had a secure spot.
He's a fucking idiot.
Maybe if he knew that his spot wasn't at risk, if he didn't have to maybe go down to the fourth line, he would be trying so hard.
Maybe.
Like, when you can't be hooking guys anymore, you know, newsflash, has he got the memo yet? He's been doing this for 3 years. So, dude, I love Sam Bennett. I think most fans do. That's why it's a love-hate relationship with him. Sam, get your head out of your ass.
Needs to get his shit together, bro. Like, seriously. Like, what is he thinking? All right, my last tired is more of a broadcast thing. What the fuck is with the no shot clock?
Done two?
Yeah. I did Derek Ryan and... was Derek Ryan my only one so far? What was the other one?
That's all you've done.
Derek Ryan. Shit. Okay, well, my second one is there was no goddamn shot clock for, like, a game and a half. Sportsnet.
Come on.
Get your shit together.
Figure it out. We get it. You're rusty too, but like, how hard is it?
Not that hard. Okay, I better think of another tired where you're talking about your last one here.
Okay, so my last tired is Jeff Ward. This is more of like a, I'm just worried. Okay?
Okay.
Please don't fuck this up, Jeff Ward. Please don't. In game one, we saw you fuck it up. You had the fourth line out there to start the game, start the second period. It bit you in the ass. We saw your, you know, player management throughout the game not work. Game two was a good response, right? You had Johnny Imani in the offensive zone more often, the faceoffs. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Game three, like, Lucic, man, like, the guy can't do anything wrong. Like, he's on the ice, like, every other shift. He's, like, his favorite player. So, I don't know. Jeff Ward, we gave him some props today. He's done some good things. But the things that I'm tired of are the things I don't want to ever see again. I don't want him to yo-yo back and forth, be like, oh, God, what's Jeff Ward doing tonight? And then he has to redeem himself. I want to see him redeem himself. I just want to see him figure it out and move on.
Yeah, no more getting yourself into a hole and having to redeem yourself. Just exactly. Do it, bro.
The one thing that you mentioned that I do like that he's doing, you know, we saw Bill Peters do this. After the team kills a penalty, he rolls out Monty and Johnny because they're not penalty killers. And Lindholm is. So Lindholm was never taking the first shift with them. Bill Peters was always putting Neil with those two. Never worked. But Jeff Ward is doing the same thing, but he's playing Matthew Tkachuk with them after he killed penalties. So, and we've seen them dominate. I'd like to see more of that, please.
I absolutely love seeing Matthew Tkachuk and Johnny Gaudreau on the ice together. Like, it gets me so jazzed up. It's one of my favorite things.
They actually had a great, like, was it one or two shifts? That one shift was unbelievable.
All right, I figured out my last tired and is broadcast related as well. How is it,
Jesse Campbell? Could you shut the hell up?
Listen, what was she going to talk? What was she talking about, dude? It's just like nonstop. Like, Gaudreau is like on a breakaway or something, and it's literally, like, she's like, holy shit! And I don't. I have kind of grown to like her and stuff. But Jesus Christ,
she's like, dude, it just doesn't stop. It's like a fucking wind-up doll, man. It's like somebody pulls her string, and it doesn't matter what's going on in the game. Like you said, someone's on a breakaway, and she's just like, yeah, when we talked about this 2 weeks ago when I visited him and I called him on the
score.
It's like she's telling, like, stop telling stories, okay?
She's like Pierre Maguire. It's like they're both annoying and would be fine. Like, have her on the intermission. That's fine. And I don't
know, like,
break stuff down during the intermission, but don't do it during the game.
And the pitch, it's the high pitch too. It's just the dit. What is that? Bill Burr does that, right? It's just not. Can you just take one breath, say what you need to say, and let's get back to the play-by-play? That's
I don't even know what the hell she's talking about half the time either. So we can't. Like, she was just starting to get on my good side, and now she's like. What I was gonna say about the broadcast is Troy Brower a worse broadcaster than he was a hockey player?
Dude, yes.
100%. What was he doing? Why did he have such a hard time?
This lady sounds like that.
What was his tie? He looked like he just had, like, got, he's all disheveled. His tie is like half undone. Dude looked rough.
A, I didn't understand a word he said.
No.
B, I couldn't if I could because I'm too busy looking at his dumb face. Like, he looks,
oh, dude, boy,
not a broadcaster.
Yeah, I, like, right. More Versteeg and more Station and probably a little less Troy Brower. Like, I know he's got nothing to do.
A little less.
Jeez Louise.
I don't know where he fits in. Maybe let's try him on that little panel where they sit in the chairs.
Like, maybe he'd be better on a panel, but like that, it's like he looked like a deer. He's like, oh man, has that guy ever been on TV in his life?
Can you slow it down a bit? First off, like, you don't have to, like, say it as fast as you humanly possibly can.
Yeah.
And B, you're pretty monotone, bud. He's monotone.
Yeah, the new Troy Brower intermission is probably worse than the Brower play ever was.
All right. Good pull on that. Well done. we'll say this for the last time. DraftKings is our sponsor for the week. Download the app. I downloaded it. Like I said, I picked the wrong guys. But Conor McGregor's fighting this Saturday. Put some money on that. See what you can do. And then we'll catch you on the flip side.
What is up, everybody? Mikey CLT here from Bar Down Breakdown, letting you know that our 100th episode is going to be dropping exclusively on the Hockey Podcast Network on January 27th. We will be joined by special guest Derek from the amazing pop punk band State Champs. Make sure you subscribe and follow us on all our socials so you do not miss any of our amazing episodes. We are so pumped that we have made it to episode 100. And to thank you, we are running an Instagram contest where one lucky winner can win a Stee's brand snapback hat. So head over to our Instagram and enter our contest. Also, if you are just hearing about Bar Down Breakdown, make sure you go and check out our 99 other episodes where we have had artists who have been nominated for Grammys, all the way down to artists who are unsigned, where we dive into the crossover between alternative music and hockey. So make sure you go and check out Bar Down Breakdown wherever you listen to podcasts, brought to you exclusively by the Hockey Podcast Network.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns. Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.